Hey guys, it's Les. I'm here to let you know about something you're going to notice in the episode that you're about to listen to. The quality is not what it normally is because I forgot to choose the very high quality microphone that that Tanner and I purchased with the money that we raised from the first fundraiser that that you fine people contributed to. And instead, I used the microphone that's built into my MacBook, which is a fine microphone as far as microphones that are built into computers go, but it's not as nice as the wonderful microphone that we usually use. So it sounds terrible, and I hope it doesn't detract too much from your enjoyment of the episode. So hopefully you'll get used to it, and it won't be too distracting. So that's enough explanations. Please try your best to enjoy this episode that I messed up real bad. Thanks. Gentlemen, welcome to episode 45 of the Reform Pubcast, your weekly podcast where all of our good episodes are like filthy rags. I'm your unwell host, Les.
And I'm your rich in friends and in beer host, Tanner.
Nice. So there was a lot of strange drama in the pub this week because... unbeknownst to me, it was announced in the pub that that I was having
it's a very English way of saying it. Unbeknownst to me,
I was it was announced that I was having chest pains.
Yeah, I got that text, and I got it after like a huge study block, and I knew it was highly unlikely that you were having a heart attack. But then I thought, what if he is having a heart attack, and I didn't get his text, and he's lying on the floor somewhere?
Yeah. So. It was actually my mom that very, very publicly let everybody know, which, you know, I'm not upset with her about or anything, but, she mentioned it in the pub and, then it became this, like, there was a post, by Adam that said that, that Les is having chest pains, and then everybody started praying for me. And there was this long post about praying for Les, which I appreciate. But so basically I had this like weird like pain, like burning feeling in my chest for probably like a week and a half, and I wasn't really sure if it was too serious, and then one day it was just too uncomfortable to not do something about. So we went into like a walk-in clinic because we couldn't get into our family doctor. But anyways, they said I have, yeah, and you all know now, I have pneumono-ultramicroscopic silica volcanoconiosis.
Which is walking pneumonia?
I guess.
Yeah, like you don't feel ill, but you have pneumonia.
Yeah. So, you know, I was hanging out near some volcanoes. I inhaled some of the volcanic ash, and now I have the longest word in the English language as a disease within me. I mentioned to my wife how crazy it actually would be if I died of pneumono-ultramicroscopic silica volcanoconiosis, and she said that at least I'd go out doing what I love. Which is bragging that I know the longest word in the English language.
Mm. She loves you so much.
Which is true. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's, I would. I would love to be telling people that. Like, oh, I'm going to die soon of pneumono ultramicroscopic silica. So, but as I was, as this reality was setting in, I was thinking about it this week, like how crazy it is that we live in a time when, you know, we have penicillin and stuff. And it's just nuts that not that long ago, pneumonia was a death sentence. And now for me, it's like, it's no big deal. Like, it's hardly even noticeable. I just have a discomfort in my chest.
The huge question is how are we going to fit the longest word in the English language on your tombstone? Les, he died of
pneumono ultramicrospic silica volcanoconiosis. That would be
go into the dirt. Like, we'll have to get an extra long tombstone, and they'll be like, this guy is such a braggart. He knew the longest word in the English language, and he has the tallest tombstone in this graveyard. What a jerk.
He was so smart, God punished him with the longest disease.
Oh. So what's the status?
I don't know. I'm on some antibiotics, and I have an inhaler, which is cool. I've never had an inhaler before, so that's fun.
Funny story about inhalers while we're on it. So I had really bad allergies as a kid it's oak pollen that I think I'm really allergic to. And so my doctor gave me like an inhaler it was an antihistamine inhaler. Then when the nurse practitioner came in to give me like a sample, because they would give me samples before I got the prescription filled, she's like, "Now listen, you really have to be careful with this because it's an antihistamine. You can't take more than is directed." And I was like 15 or something, and I was like, "Why would I do more of this?" And she's like, "Well, I had a girl come in like yesterday, and I gave her one of these," and she's like, "Oh wow, these are so in right now."
What?
So I guess like at some point, like inhalers were in.
And you would just OD on inhalers?
I guess. Like, some girl was saying how inhalers are like an in thing. I don't know.
Is there ever a drug that would be put into inhalers that would actually like affect your consciousness at all?
Sure.
Like what?
Well, like, I don't know. Like, there's definitely drugs that like inhibit certain hormones, like peptide hormones, that can relax you and make you feel high.
Really?
Sure. Yeah. Huh. I mean, you can atomize just about anything,
right,
that can be taken orally, and then if you can atomize it, it'll get absorbed in the lungs straight into the bloodstream. So you could technically atomize. I mean, I guess you could atomize anything in liquid form. I mean, I don't know how much it would like burn going down, but I mean, they administer drugs sometimes, like people on vents, they administer drugs that way, but mostly it's just steroids and like, you know, anti-prostaglandins and stuff like that, but I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Anti-prostaglandins, right?
Yeah.
I understand.
There you go. Which are actually, funny enough, no dirty mouth intended, but they're actually called Cox blockers. Because they block COX-1 and COX-2, which are the like the two activators for prostaglandins, and we had a test question this week, well, a quiz question, and I got it wrong, and I was really angry. And in the middle of class, it was a combination drug of NSAIDs, which is like aspirins, and they comboed it with like a prostaglandin activator. And I got it wrong because I didn't really understand like what they were asking. And then we talked about it in class, and I was like, those freaking Cox blockers.
Everybody hates Cox blockers.
So aspirin is such a Cox blocker.
It's
such a pain. Les, I had a hangout with some fellow listeners yesterday.
You did?
Yeah, you saw the picture.
I did.
We went to a place called Barley and Vine, which is like a beer garden, but it was too hot to hang out in the garden, so we sat inside, and it was Sean and Jason Welpy. Sean's from Dogfish Head, up in Delaware, and
yeah. He
is down visiting Jason. They're good friends, and we had a great time talking beer. He is much smarter than me.
That's Sean Miller, right?
Yes, yeah. And he schooled me on beer, and I guess he's like one of the main tasters. Like, I guess the chemistry department at Dogfish Head does tasting every day.
What a cool freaking job.
I know. He even said, he's like, well, when you're studying on, you know, this week, I'll think of you when I'm tasting at 10:30 in the morning, when you can't have beer. And I was like, thanks a lot, man.
That's so cool.
But he was telling us about how they train them for tasting, and they actually get spike kits. They like, I guess he formulates spike kits, and they spike like normal beers with certain flavors to learn like what all flavors taste like.
Huh.
And so in the paneling, they'll spike stuff and to test to make sure that their taste buds are on for the day. And they'll say, okay, this one is, you know, whatever. This one's spiked with whatever. It's got too much diacetyl, or it has, you know, like a varnish taste or whatever. And then he linked Jason and I, because I was saying, man, I would love to know how to do that. I would love, you know, to be able to learn how, like what all flavors are what, so that I can, you know, judge my beer more appropriately. And he sent Jason and I a link to like the kit. You can buy this kit that you can spike beers with and like basically teach yourself how to taste.
Wow.
All flavors and stuff. But this dude, Sean, is so smart. Like he really, the guy knows beer in and out. It was a really great conversation. We talked about Dogfish, and we talked about like, you know, just what he does there. And he told us like how like Sam, Kolonji, or I forget how to pronounce his name, but he'll like come in because he's kind of like, you know, he's like the experiment guy, and the head brewers make all the normal stuff, but he'll come in, and he said, like, I guess just recently Sam comes in and he's like, hey, so there's this juicing company and I want to try to do a beer with them, so you know, here's the juice and do what you guys do and give me the readouts for like the sugars and stuff and mix it with Midas and tell me how it goes. And I'm like, dude, how cool is that? Like, the owner of Dogfish comes in and tells you to, like, basically formulate a great way to mix Midas Touch with, like, a juice.
That's amazing.
And so, I guess he brews all the time, like, small batches for testing. And Sean is, like, one of the guys who gets to taste them.
Jeez.
And say whether they suck or not. So, but the coolest thing about it was, and this is a little bit of a surprise for you, Sean brought us a crap ton of beer from Dogfish. So I've got a 4-pack of 120, a 4-pack of, I forget the name of it, something peach or something, and then a whole box of Bombers with just a ton of stuff in there, man. Like, I forget exactly. Like, right now I'm having Rosabi, which is an Imperial Pale Ale that's brewed with wasabi.
What?
So we have a ton of beer from Dogfish, stuff that you can't normally get like all the time. And he just shared it. Plus, there's more. He gave us two Dogfish head glasses.
What?
Yep. So, really cool. Great time. I appreciate those guys pulling me out of my study cave and getting me out.
All right, hold up. Roll it back. Did you just say that I have waiting for me two bottles of 120?
Yes.
It's a Christmas miracle.
120, dude. And it rarely comes out, so we're very lucky to have
it. Oh, man. Oh, dude, that's so awesome. Sean, you're the best.
It doesn't get much better than that. So
that's amazing.
I can't thank those guys enough for just hanging out with me. I'm kind of a loser, and me having a podcast has awarded me people who probably would not normally hang out with me to hang out with me. So, I mean, how often do you get a chance to hang out with somebody who works at Dogfish Head?
The chemist from Dogfish,
in the top five best breweries in the country, like somebody who works there, like, and tastes for them, hung out with me yesterday.
Sean Miller, thank you so much for being awesome. Thanks for listening to our stupid podcast. We appreciate it, man.
Definitely. He said he's got it all queued up for his, I think it's an 18-hour drive home or something.
Oh,
so
man.
He's going to be catching up. He said he's a little behind, but...
so cool.
Yeah, so I hope he leaves... he still has time to listen to this episode on the way home so that he can hear our love for him.
Got to get my hands on that 120.
Yeah,
so
man. I promise you, I still have two bottles of Mirror Pond for you, too, from all the way from Hawaii.
I have some good beers in my future.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, so, speaking of beers, so the one you're drinking has wasabi in it.
Yeah, and the reason I'm drinking it is Sean said that the wasabi oxidizes really quickly, so he said I should drink it as quick as possible. So I'll read from the bottle here. It says, the vivid rose hue of rosabi comes from the combination of Munich and caramel malts and a touch of red rice from Louisiana, birthplace of musician and collaborator Juliana Barwick. Citrusy Simcoe and Centennial feed Juliana's love of hops, and the star of the show is her go-to ingredient, wasabi. What's hoppy? Wasabi. The Japanese root adds bittering and herbal notes similar to hops, with its subtle heat creeping in after the kick of the of carbonation. It's expansive from start to finish. So go ahead, take a sip, toss your head back, and howl at the red rosabi moon.
So is it good?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the wasabi, I think Sean was right. The wasabi has kind of petered out a little bit. It's not as spicy as I think it's supposed to be. But it definitely you definitely can tell there's a difference in the bitterness from it, and it's super well balanced. Like it has a lot of body, but the wasabi bittering really balances out that body. So I'm enjoying it. It is a very red beer, and it's Dogfish Head. There's not much bad to say about any beer they brew. So it's really, really good, and I'm drinking it out of one of our new glasses, Les. So cheers to that.
You got your swag, you got a t-shirt,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. It's all great. I love it. The swag is awesome.
Very good. I am drinking 10-50 from Oscar Blues. I've been looking forward to this for a very, very long time.
Good stuff.
Oh, man, it is huge. This is an intense beer. 10-50 apparently is the reference to the alcohol content, which is 10.5.
Mix that with if you can get some more, grab some 90 minute IPA from Dogfish,
yeah,
and make what's called a 1090.
Whoa, I like that.
Yeah, it's actually really, really good. It's like a black and tan, but it's the most complex black and tan you will ever drink. I had one at Vine and Barley because they always have 90 minute, and when they have 1050 on, I usually get that. And I'm like, I can't decide between a 90 minute and a 1050. And my bartender was like, have both. I'll blend them for you. I was like, perfect.
Whoa.
And dude, it was one of the best blended beers I've ever had. It was fantastic.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I wouldn't say waste any of the 120 on that, but if you can get some 90 minute, definitely blend those two. It's really good. It's like, I don't know how to explain it. I'd have to have it in front of me and try it again, but I remember it being really, really complex and really heavy on the alcohol side. So
that's awesome. Across the top, it says cross-eyed, cyclopean, and cancupiscent, which is funny. I just took my final for this gospel class I was doing for a seminary, and we had to talk a lot about concupiscence. And concupiscent is one of the words on the can, which is pretty funny, which just means that we're like, you know, born with a proclivity to sin. Pretty funny. Cool. Well,
yeah, we're drinking good this week, man.
Yeah, definitely. if you guys would like to contact us, you can join our Facebook group called The Reformed Pub. While we're talking about The Reformed Pub, I have to quickly mention this. Tanner, are you familiar at all with the insanity that happened this week at the Insanity Table?
No, I saw a like thread about this, but I didn't actually. Was there a thread with like over 1,000 comments?
Yeah. So
explain this to me, because I have no clue what's going on. I haven't been on Facebook all week. So
Kiara Brown made a post basically just saying that she now that her new job is next to a store that has good beer, and she took a picture of this selection of good beer. And then she said that she was going to try a Sierra Nevada Torpedo for the first time, which is, you know, awesome. That's a pretty normal post for the pub. And for some reason, people just started commenting like crazy on this post, and it like gained this unnatural steam, and we got over 1,000 comments, on this post, but the comments weren't about anything in particular. Like halfway through, it got labeled the insanity table, as in, you know, the table in the pub where people are just insane. So,
what were the comments about?
That's the question, I guess. I even asked, like, so when this moment goes down in history of the longest thread that's ever happened in the pub, history will say the thread was about what exactly? And there is no answer to that question because they talked about nothing. It was just
so many people were getting notifications on it.
It was just absolute insanity. It made no sense. It was Alice in Wonderland. So that was fun. We finally have a thread with over 1,000 comments about nothing. It's like a Seinfeld episode.
Gosh, dude, there are 2 deer in my backyard right now.
Oh,
like,
that's cool.
Literally 2 deer, like, prancing around in my backyard.
Are they buck?
No. They're just like little, like, you know, like little Florida deer, tiny little deer. But there's 2 of them, and they're in my backyard. Nice. That's crazy. I know.
Special men.
Special.
Well, if you guys would like to follow us on Twitter, our Twitter handle is @ReformPubcast. You can email us reformedpub@gmail.com. And you can always leave us voicemails by calling 772-405-7327. And we have some voicemails once again this week. Let's listen to some of those voicemails.
Hi, my name is Mike. I'm a new listener, and I'm on episode 14 or 15. And I was just tricked into putting the phone number into my contact when I was searching for my Puritan name. So I don't know if you guys remember that from earlier this year. And I brought this podcast up to the pastor at my church and said, hey, I'm listening to your podcast. It's pretty cool. They talk about beer and they talk about theology. And he said, we need that. And I was like, what? But no, we need that. We need to sit in the pub and drink and talk about theology. So basically, we kind of put the word out there, and this group has grown to about 12 people, maybe, very, very rapidly in like 3 days. And so we're meeting tonight for the first time. And just want to thank you guys for inspiring that. Cheers and amen.
That's awesome.
Cheers and amen.
I didn't get his name. I think he said Bryce. It kind of like cut out when he said it. Maybe Bryce. How many lives are we touching, Les, with this podcast?
Oh, so many lives.
Soon we're going to be like a Kevin Bacon thing. Like a, what is it? Six degrees. 6 degrees to the pubcast. Because funny story, there's a guy in my med school class who went to seminary, up north somewhere, I think like in the New England area. And he somehow, like, I guess I posted something on, the med school page on Facebook, and he's like, hey, you're a host of that podcast. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, my buddy in seminary listens to that, and he's a part of the pub. So it's crazy. Like, when I meet Christians, a lot of times, somehow, like, they might not necessarily listen to the podcast, but they some way somehow, I would say, like, a lot of times they say, oh yeah, it's, you know, I'm a part of the Reformed Pub, or I have a friend who's a part of that group on Facebook. That's really cool. And it's weird. We don't. How many members are we up to in the pub now, Les?
2,200.
2,200. And somehow, like, I guess in the young reform camp, somebody knows somebody who's in our group, which is really cool.
That's so cool. I was actually studying for a test. We were like doing a group study last weekend, and the guy that I lead the young adults ministry with, his girlfriend was there helping us study. And she was like, you know, last week I was down in Fort Lauderdale and I was hanging out in like the kitchen area with some friends. And I met this guy that said that he listens to the Reformed Pubcast. And I'm like, what? That's insane. And it turned out it was Chris Orsini.
Yeah, he actually works. He actually is a cook at
a school,
like a Christian school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she just, you know, started a conversation with him, and it turns out that he listens to the show.
Yeah, it's so insane, cool. Man. It's insane.
Thanks for the encouragement. We really, really appreciate it.
Next voicemail?
Yep. Hey guys, it's Matthew Campbell. I've been listening to you guys for a little bit now, and very, very much enjoying the podcast and the discussion on Facebook, and it's been very, very helpful to me. But I have a question for you guys. Just recently, actually on my way back here from a conference at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, actually where Sam is from, him I met up, but came back from a conference, and one of the guys, I won't mention his name, but one of the speakers there was talking about being ready for discipling. And he brought up the topic of if you look at Paul and Timothy, he says that you can almost say that Paul did not disciple Timothy. Obviously, at a seminary, this got all kinds of flack. And basically, the guy was saying that we should stop, quote-unquote, discipling people and just walk through life with people and don't go up to people, you know, don't go to your pastor or a leader that you want to be discipled by, and don't go up to them and say, hey, will you pour into my life? You go up to them and we're supposed to say, how can I make your life better? And then through there, they're going to disciple you. But they're not going to disciple you because that's weird. That's what he kept saying. Discipling, that the concept behind discipling is weird. So just to know what your guys' thoughts on that were. It was just a very interesting topic that he brought up and the way that he was preaching about it. Again, he got a lot of flack for it at the conference, but so just interested to hear what you guys think. Thanks for the podcast, and cheers and amen.
Cheers and amen, Matthew.
Cheers and amen.
I'm weary of any argument that ends in "it's weird."
That's weird.
That's weird.
This thing that the church has held to for a long, long time. It's weird.
It's weird. I think it's just like, I feel like, we've talked about this before, how I feel like every generation of pastors, like there's always, you know, it's pastors in every generation who have to try to be like new and inventive in the way that they look at the Bible. I completely disagree. Yeah, I mean, I had, I guess you could call it like a mentor or somebody who was discipling me before I got married, when I was thinking about getting married, when I was dating my now wife, who kind of walked me through a lot of, you know, what it was to be a husband and what was going to be expected out of me, and was there when I was really coming down to the decision of proposing, and just really was kind of like my like a sounding board for things, and we memorized scripture together and we prayed together. We had coffee every week. And it was just someone who was older and wiser, who's lived life longer than me, has been walking with Jesus a heck of a lot longer than I have, has seen a lot more than I have, and was able to say, hey, these are some things that I wish somebody would have said to me. Here's some things that I wish I would have done for my now wife, you know, when we were dating, and was really just a lot of accountability. And it was super helpful. God blessed the relationship immensely. I was blessed immensely by it. And I think that it helped me avoid a lot of silly, immature young man mistakes that a lot of guys make when they first get married. I still made plenty of mistakes, but I think a lot were avoided by God putting somebody in my life who was there to really look out for me and give me wisdom. So, I don't know, Les, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we have a recipe per se of like exactly how discipleship should go, but discipleship itself is certainly not a weird thing in Scripture. We are, you know, it's obviously Jesus had disciples and he was teaching them and they were being sent out to you know, carry on this message that was being given to them. And then Paul, especially to Timothy, You know, like 2 Timothy 2:2 says, "And what you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." So discipleship is just this idea of passing on the teachings of the Bible, teachings of Jesus, onto the next generation to continue this heritage that we have of biblical, faithful teaching and preaching. So there's nothing weird about any of that. And if you feel called to learn more about Jesus and be under accountability of someone who's going to raise you up to be that next generation, and you want to ask your pastor to be that, there's nothing wrong with that. Or if your pastor feels led to pursue a person that they find interesting, you know, or that they see something in, and they think that they would be a good disciple, then by all means, I don't see any reason that there's one way or the other we should do that. It's just the idea that we have to pass this thing on to the next generation. And however that goes about, I don't see any problem with it.
I think it's one of those things like where I don't think that the Bible is, you know, obviously the Bible isn't black and white saying like, oh, you know, here's how you find somebody to disciple you. And here's how here's the format of how the meeting should go when you meet with your disciple and, you know, blah, 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 you know, all that. But there obviously is some liberty in how these relationships play out. But it's kind of like one of these things where I feel like people get kind of wrapped up in stuff that there isn't, you know, black and white instruction on. And this is when you kind of have to just use, you have to use the Holy Spirit to kind of direct these relationships. And man, if God is blessing it and it's bringing you to better worship, it's bringing you to better obedience, and it's making you a better follower of Christ, like, okay, so there's not like a black and white instruction on it, but there isn't a black and white instruction for everything that God's going to use to bless you. So why are we like splitting hairs on things like this? Like, it's kind of silly, I think. You know, like, there's things in life that God has blessed me with that I can't find something in the Bible that says, oh, well, this is a way that God will, you know, this is the kind of relationship that God will use to bless you, or this is a kind of a way that God will, you know, use to, as he's working in you and he's completing the work that he started in you, here's one of the examples that he'll do it in. You just have to use like good judgment. Like if you are meeting with a man who's older than you and he's wise and he's giving you good gospel-centered instruction, why even question whether, like, well, I can't find anything in the Bible specifically that says that this is how this should go, so maybe this is a bad thing. Like, you know, I mean, I just get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
Les?
Yeah, definitely. Which, you know, maybe this guy is saying something even to the other extreme, which is like, maybe he's reacting to a methodology that is like the only way of discipleship, which I doubt. It doesn't sound like that's what's being said. But yeah, I think discipleship is a very sort of open to whoever is going to initiate, you know, that relationship. I don't think there's like set in stone rules about the way this thing has to go.
Well, next voicemail.
Let's do it.
Hey guys, this is Chris Norsworthy from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'm not sure if you've talked about this or not. I haven't been able to listen to all of the podcasts, but my oldest daughter will be 4 at the end of this year, and we've started the homeschool process. I also would like to be able to teach them, my kids, go through some kind of devotional, or I mean, I don't know exactly what would be the best way of teaching the kids. And I know some of y'all have, I don't know if you're both blind, have older kids than I do, but what would y'all suggest in terms of a book, catechism or something, to go through with the kids, and how? So Make sure I get around to it. Thanks. Cheers and amen.
Cheers and amen.
So Chris wants to know how, I guess, to get into catechism with his kids. We've talked about this a couple times less, right?
Yeah. You have a Reformed Baptist catechism, right?
I use New City Catechism.
Oh, you do? Awesome.
Yeah, because it's like broken up into weeks, and they have songs that go along with it that we can play in the car. And it's on my phone, so we can like pull it up at dinner. And so every week we do a new question, and the answers are very straightforward. And yeah, we work through it. So I really like New City. If you know, you can download it on Android or iOS. So you could check that out, Chris. And then Les, you use, what do you use?
I use, it's called First Catechism, Teaching Children Bible Truths, and it's by Great Commission Publications. And it's based on the Westminster, but it's, very condensed. So the answers are easier for kids to memorize. And I'm thinking about restarting the kid cast, the Reformed kid cast, and we're just going to basically start going through the catechism as a podcast. So that's an idea we'll be doing. So that might be a tool that you'll be able to use as well. But this is the catechism I use. Tanner, you use New City, and isn't there like a feature where there's like an adult version and a kid's version, and it like, yes, literally just like removes some of the words to condense.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's very cool.
And it seems pretty easy for my 3-year-old to memorize. He gets excited about it. Like I said, because there's songs that go along with it that you can play right in the app. And the songs are really good. It's like kids and this woman singing the songs. And they're not your like typical super annoying like Bible, you know, kids Bible music that's, yeah, usually really, really like horrendous. It's actually like an acoustic guitar, and you know, it's good. It's good. The kids enjoy it. So, and it's easy. So I would start there. I don't know how old your kids are, but you know, or I know like you've had a lot of success with the one you use less, so that's an option too.
Yeah.
And then the KidCast, which will be awesome. I didn't realize you were going to be going through catechism. It's going to create a great catalog for people.
Yeah. So. And it'll be like hopefully the idea is it'll be a father talking through catechism with his kids. So it'll be like very, very focused, and you know, kids asking questions that kids would ask. So that's the idea. So we'll see how that goes.
Sounds awesome.
Thank you, sir. So Tanner, would you like to play a game?
I always like to play games.
Let's play Would You Rather. I put up another Would You Rather request to the pub, and we'll see.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we'll see what we get here. So first off, I need to pick James White's daughter by necessity. So Summer Pinch, her first scenario is, this is to you, Tanner. Would you rather listen to nothing but Joyce Myers? I assume that's for sermon preaching and whatnot. Or, and this other one is by Jared Meyer. Or would you rather have
Joyce
your
Myers' long lost son?
Son. Or would you rather have your life be a movie that switches genres every day? I'm opening the floor for questions.
I'll start with the second one. I usually start with the first.
Okay.
Okay. Gosh, I don't even know how to ask questions on this one. Seems pretty straightforward. Okay, so my life is a movie.
Uh-huh.
Who's the director, first of all? Does the director change with the genre?
Yeah, it depends on the genre.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
So there are going to be days directed by Michael Bay.
No.
Oh yeah.
Why can't the action days be directed by Nolan?
That'll be drama action days.
Drama action?
Yeah, you get subgenres.
Oh gosh.
Basically every day of your life is directed by a new director.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Who are my co-stars on Action Days?
Schwarzenegger shows up sometimes.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's really good.
That's a carrot right there.
But they show up as cameos. Like, there's the normal cast of your life, which includes your wife and your kids and your teachers and your coworkers. Your life is a lot of studying, which is pretty boring. So there's like
Tana, you've got to get out of here. We got to stop studying. They're coming to get you.
Yes. So, but Schwarzenegger is very concerned about your education as well, just as you are. So as you're
my education on learning how to fly a chopper.
Right. So as you're jumping from a chopper to a stealth bomber to get away from the terrorist explosions happening.
This is a Michael Bay day.
Yeah.
The chopper blows up as I'm jumping out of it.
Yeah. on days like that, Schwarzenegger is still like quizzing you and you're like repeating the answers back as you're jumping across, which is pretty
intense. He's my study buddy.
Yeah. Whoever's with you, they're still concerned about your life goals. So they quiz you. And even if it's like romantic comedies, like Sam will be the actress in those scenarios and she'll like,
that's pretty cool.
She'll be like romantically whispering quiz questions to you.
No. Oh, so this is like it's my life,
yeah.
But there's all this crazy stuff going around me. So who are okay? So Comedy Days, who are the writers on Comedy Days?
The writers of Arrested Development get in there sometimes, which is fun.
These are carrots.
A lot of you're dry humor. You know, the Dumb and Dumber crew gets in on some episodes.
Oh, okay. All right. I get to meet famous people. Do I get to go on location?
You don't meet famous people. Like, the writers are writing your life. I mean, you do, but you don't recognize them as famous people. They just show up in your life and they, you know, walk through it with you or whatever. Jason Bateman might narrate an episode and like make some dry humor. You'll meet him in the morning and throughout the day. You know, he'll like,
I don't know he's famous. Like, right. So Schwarzenegger pulls up into my driveway in like his Hummer. And I'm like, who is this huge dude talking in an Austrian accent?
Then he runs inside with a machine gun. And he gets you. Get down.
Get down. You've got to get in my Hummer and get out of here.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's a good, you know, it's going to be a fun day for you. But also your personality changes throughout the days as well. So you'll have, you know, pretty rough, you know, you'll be like slapstick comedian one day. And the next day in the action movies, your back's going to hurt. So you're going to be like, you're going to have to keep referring to that because of all the slapstick comedy you did the day before.
Oh, man. Okay. And then like romantic comedy days, I take on a Matthew McConaughey character. All right.
Or even some French romance movies. Which are like just surreal.
Really dirty?
Yeah, real dirty and steamy. And jeez. Yeah.
Now, is this publicly, like, do these release in the box office?
Yes. Every day there's a Tanner's Life episode that pops up in Netflix for consumption.
Am I getting paid royalties for all of this acting that I'm doing?
No, it's like Truman Show. You don't even know it's happening to you.
Okay. All right, and the first scenario was Joyce Meyer.
Yeah, you listen to nothing but Joyce. Wait. This is what Summer said. You listen to nothing but Joyce Meyers. So we're going to
I always have earbuds in and all I can hear is Joyce Meyer.
Or okay, let's say like, you
just preaching garbage at me.
You have a you have a disease that that all audio from people coming into your ears is reinterpreted as Joyce Meyer's preaching nonsense.
I'm just thinking about like the fact that all day long, the author of Me and My Big Mouth.
Is that a book she wrote? Saying, yeah. What?
She'll be like, Tanner, you can suffer the pain of change or suffer remaining the way you are.
That's
And I'm like, I'm getting super frustrated in med school class, and she's like, when you're tempted to give up, your breakthrough is probably just around the corner. And I'm like, oh, thanks, Joyce. Stop determining your worth and value by what other people say. Be determined by what the Word of God, Scriptures, say.
Tanner, I have a feeling you did some Google work before everything you're saying right now.
Character is doing what you don't want to do, but you know you should do.
I'm going to go ahead and assume she has a Southern accent.
Yes. Les, you can not live your life just based on what everyone else thinks.
These are the things you're going to hear. Basically, again, fortune cookie.
Now, advice. Am I like a fan? Am I a fan of Joyce Meyer? Like, do I show up to, do I have like the, do I go in costume? Like for movie premieres, people dress up. Do I go in costume to, like to get her tickets to her shows? What are they? I don't even know what they are. Conferences. And like, I show up in Joyce Meyer costume, like full clad, like pantsuit.
What?
In a short, like 1960s Bob haircut.
I don't even know where you're going with this. No, you're like...
I'm asking you, am I a fan? Am I a fan of this, or am I miserable?
It's whoever you are right now, and starting tomorrow, this new way of hearing begins. So basically, you're a reformed dude, and now your entire life revolves around hearing her... whatever the things you just said. That's not even...
garbage at me all day long.
Yeah, she just spits garbage. But you know,
am I ever inspired? Do I ever? I'm like, you know, the timing of that comment.
That little nug came through.
That little nugget of wisdom, or whatever you want to call it. The timing was opportune.
Yeah, sure. She says a lot of positive things, so every once in a while you're gonna feel like pumped up. Like, yeah, that's right. Thanks, Joyce. But you won't say Joyce. You'll say Dr. Stevens, who just gave me my physical, who's actually, but somehow is talking in Joyce Meyer's voice.
Dude, I'm laughing. I'm laughing at some of these quotes. She is like, she's like the Dr. Seuss of crappy theology. Complain and remain, praise and be raised.
I like that.
Here, this is my favorite one. We need a backbone, not a wishbone.
What? Sheesh. All right.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to go ahead and close the floor for questions. Tanner, would you rather listen to nothing but Joyce Meyer's or have your life be a movie that switches genres every day?
Dude, I'm gonna switch genres every day.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah, as funny as some of this stuff is, I could not do this constantly. There's no way. I would throw myself off of a high place.
Yeah, it sounds pretty miserable. Even like
but,
while you're
but that's what I'm feeling. And Joy says that I should not. It's, she says, "Don't let your feelings be a god to you." So
that's actually Joyce. That's actually pretty good advice.
That's actually it's not that bad. But somewhere like before or after that, she said something else stupid. So.
Probably very terrible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you want to get into some topics?
Yeah. Let's cool. do that.
I was thinking. So a couple of weeks ago now. There was a great conversation in the pub about picking a spouse, mm-hmm. and specifically about, like, you know, how important is it that you share your theological convictions with with the spouse that you're going to pursue, especially for single people who aren't married yet. And then, you know, that led to this whole talk about settling for a spouse that's not the ideal for you, in your opinion. And I made a comment reflecting some wisdom that you actually helped me understand, Tanner, which was this idea that the person we're married to it's not that they're like the greatest person in the world and you're going to like just stare at this person for the rest of your life in awe because they're so amazing and perfect and wonderful. But, you know, our spouse is the person God has given to us. And that's the reason that we love them and cherish them and have all these romantic feelings towards them.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the nature of marriage, but, you know, on the flip side, the nature of you know, romance and how we should have a biblical view on things like that.
That's perfect, man, because funny enough, my topic is pretty much the same thing. So we should just tie these together.
What's your topic?
Well, my topic is coming from a Gospel Coalition, I guess, blog post that's titled "That Relationship Will Not Complete You," off the 1996 hit film Jerry Maguire. It's pretty much everything. We're going to cover everything that I want to say about this by talking about what you just brought up. So,
why don't you start it? It sounds like we're on the same page. Let's go.
Well, basically, we've talked about this before, like the whole, I think for guys and girls both, I think I see this more with girls though, as far as, you know, the fairy tale fantasy, relationship and expectations of meeting the one, you know, I actually, it's funny because, I think the first time, It's actually one of the reasons why I really enjoyed the movie Frozen. Funny enough, that the whole movie plays on this whole idea, this whole like genre of like the one prince who's perfect and everything, and the movie, you get like the sense that that's how that movie's gonna go, and then it kind of it makes humor out of it and shows like that it's kind of like a joke that, you know, princess and prince are always coming together because the prince turns out to be like this big jerk who's just trying to like exploit the kingdom and stuff, and then the in message of
spoiler alert.
Seriously, spoiler alert on Frozen. Okay, well, anyways, yeah. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it because I've always said like they should make a movie where it plays out. Like, it kind of cracks jokes at this whole idea that there's, you know, a prince in shining armor is going to come and sweep you off your feet and all your worries and cares are going to be taken care of and, you know, it's just going to be perfect. And I think that I just see this a lot. Like, people get married and it feels like, a fairy tale at first. And then problems start happening and you actually have to work through those problems. You have to solve them because you're both sinners and he's not Prince Charming and you're not a princess and you're not perfect and neither is he. So now what do? We have to fix things that are going wrong. We have to talk about things. We have to admit to each other that we're sinners. We have to admit to each other that we do things wrong to each other. And we have to forgive one another so that we can move on with life. And I think it's crushing for a lot of people to come to this realization after maybe a year of marriage or maybe sooner that, wow, this man or woman that I married isn't perfect. And it's not like... in this article, there's these equations that he has, wrong equations, like half of me plus half of him or her equals one happy, satisfied relationship. And he says that what it really is one half of me plus one half of him or her equals one quarter bitter, frustrated relationship.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really true because I don't like the way God... paints a picture of what the relationship is supposed to be like is that it's not, you don't go into these relationships expecting that person to fulfill you, or you shouldn't. And God paints it as that really these relationships on a surface level, I guess I could say that they are a way of, they're an opportunity for you to serve and an opportunity for you to really deeply start to understand, and this is where it goes deeper off the surface level, where you really start to understand and be taught what our relationship with Christ is like. So when you make sacrifices for your spouse or when your spouse sins against you, we're called to be like Christ and serve despite being spit on. And I know in my own marriage that God has taught me a lot about loving even when my spouse is sinning against me, and to strive for selflessness and to not look to what I'm going to get out of this relationship, but how I can build up the person I'm with. And that's really a reflection of what Christ has done for us, and that Christ didn't go to the cross saying, "What can the sinner do for me?" Christ went to the cross and gave up everything and said, "I'm going to give everything for my children, for sinners," not expecting anything in return. And Christ wasn't a sinner when he did it. Like, we're actually sinners, and so we're making even less of a sacrifice because we're just as rotten as the people we're married to.
Yeah.
So I think that the biggest thing is that people go in they don't go into a relationship fulfilled by God, and they're missing something, and they're missing something in their life that they should be looking to Christ for, a brokenness or a dissatisfaction. Maybe they were treated poorly by their father or their mother, and they're trying to find like fulfillment that they didn't get as a child, or maybe they have a past relationship that somebody really hurt them and said nasty things to them or was abusive to them in some way, and they look, well, this person's going to solve all that pain, this person's going to fulfill all those problems, and then they come to find out that person's just as rotten as the other people that they've dated, or just as rotten as their father or their mother, and they're not solving anything because they're looking to the wrong person for fulfillment. And so people ultimately, and this, you know, sorry, I mean, this is depressing, but people ultimately fail you. And that's why you can't look to people for that satisfaction. And that's why going into a marriage isn't about getting satisfaction from someone else. It's an opportunity to learn about the gospel. It's an opportunity to learn about how to love another person selflessly, to give yourself up for your spouse. Give everything for them, even when they spit on you, because you're in a covenant that's supposed to be a reflection of the covenant that Christ has for you, that no matter what that person does to you, there's nothing they can do to break that covenant, and you're called to continue to serve and let them spit on you even in the dark times, and let them curse at you and say nasty things about you and trash you, and you stay faithful to the covenant. And that's not what is painted for us. And, you know, I think most people don't go to the altar with like, this person is going to treat me like utter trash at some point in our years together. And I have joy about that because it's going to give me an opportunity to learn some deep things about the gospel. But that's being honest. I mean, that's really what's going to happen. Anybody who's been married for even a year has had dirt kicked in their face from their spouse. And has either, you know, had an opportunity to respond that way or not.
Yeah. And you even in those early years, if you've like fed into that lie that marriage is going to be this perfect romantic, romantic comedy movie that all turns out good in the end. You work through these things and you kind of keep them secret because, you know, we're imperfect, but one day we're going to have this perfect Christian relationship where we love each other perfectly and there's going to be no more problems, but it's not true. And I think if you can enter in to marriage with the understanding that you are not marrying the most beautiful, the smartest, the you know, most wise, or even the perfect match for me, because, you know, we think that God's going to give us like this exact counterpart that's going to complete us.
Yeah.
And now suddenly our life is going to be perfect because now we have the other half. There's a very, very real sense in which our wife, or our husband or our spouse is the other half. Absolutely. I'm not discounting that. But to think that this person is going to perfectly fit in with my personality and now we will finally complete each other in this perfect way. And maybe it'll take a few years, but you know, once we chisel each other away and we fit together perfectly, then we're going to have to be this perfect whole. You don't understand how sinful both of you are and how yeah. sinful you'll always be. From the very beginning, there are issues that you're going to overlook and you're going to ignore, and you'll overlook them because of your blindness to love, which is natural. And then you'll come together, and then over time, those things will resurface, and they'll drive you crazy, and you'll want to kill that person, and they'll want to kill you, and you'll work through those things, and it'll never go away, because there'll still be things about the other person that you wish will change, and vice versa. And that is this imperfect world we live in, where nothing is ever going to perfectly satisfy you. But we were actually going through the Song of Solomon today at church, and it's amazing the kind of romance that the Song of Solomon puts forward for a husband and a wife to appreciate and you know, look at and be blown away by. So there is this very, very real like beauty in seeing this other person that God has given you to be married to complete you, to satisfy you in all these ways that marriage satisfies us. But the key is,
yeah,
the key is that you're not satisfied because this other sinful human being finally has met all the conditions that you need for happiness. You're satisfied because of the covenant of marriage that God has ordained that you would have. So now you can appreciate, love, be satisfied by this other person in imperfect ways, and you'll be frustrated at times, and you'll be sinned against, and you'll hate each other at times, and you'll have to forgive each other and work through it, and that's okay. And as long as you enter into this relationship knowing that marriage, God's gift of marriage, is the beauty in it, not necessarily this person that you're going to be staring at for the rest of your life. You're not going to be blown away by their beauty forever. You're not going to be like enamored by their intelligence and the way that they complete you. You're going to be satisfied by the fact that God has given you this other counterpart in marriage that you two can work together through and forgive each other and love each other and learn about what it means to be a servant of Christ, and to see what it is that Christ has done for us. It's a learning tool, and it doesn't last forever. It doesn't even last into eternity, you know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of times, like we've talked about this before, like where I think one of the best ways to get through times where someone is treating you poorly, and this happens in marriage more because you have more interaction together, and there's stronger emotions involved. So when they do something to you that hurts, it hurts so much more than when just a normal person does something to you. And so there's more of a reaction because there's more emotion involved. But I think the key to getting through those times is remembering that you're no better and that you're just as capable of being just as rotten. And for me, strides that I've made, and I still have a long way to go in like forgiveness and being patient when someone sins against me and not letting my anger get, you know, take hold. But the strides that I've made in those areas have been made in my marriage, and they've been made looking at my wife and looking in a mirror and seeing myself as just as capable of doing to her what she's doing to me in that moment, and knowing that I'm no better and I'm just as much of a sinner. And knowing that I do the same thing to Jesus every day, and he doesn't forsake his covenant with me. So I think that is a huge thing to keep in mind, as well as, you know, a right understanding of sovereignty goes a long way in marriage. Like you mentioned at the beginning, we had a talk a long time ago of understanding the fact that God didn't give you your perfect match. God gave you, in his sovereignty, the person he intended you to be with. And that doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to like all the same hobbies you like. It doesn't mean that she's always going to put on makeup for you and she's, you know, always going to do everything you want her to do. You're not married to the person you're married to because they're perfect for you. You're married to them because God intends you to be married to them. And they're the right woman or right man because that's who you're married to. And God is sovereign. He doesn't make mistakes. He didn't make a mistake in your spouse. He gave you exactly who you intended, and you're to uphold a covenant with that person because that's who you're married to. That it's as simple as that. There's no other, you know, profound thing that goes to it besides the profound idea and truth that God is sovereign, and that person is your spouse because you're married to them. That's it.
Yep.
And it doesn't have, like, you know, you say it on that level, it doesn't have to take the romance away from it. It just, that's, when you're in those dark places in your marriage, that's what you need to remember. You don't need to think, well, you know, maybe I married the wrong person. Maybe, no, you didn't. You're married to the right person because you're married to them. That's the person that you're supposed to be married to. And, you know, so when you're in, you know, the ditches and you're second guessing, you know, your spouse, you're second guessing who you're with, you need to remember the sovereignty of God and that he intends you to get out of this dark place. And I think if you look at anything that is considered romantic, it really boils down to putting somebody else's needs in front of your own. So, you know, anytime that I do something for my wife and she says, oh, that was romantic, or that was, that, you know, that really made me happy, or it really made me feel like you cared about me. It's like when I go out of my way to take care of something for her so that we can, you know, go out on a date or something. You know, like I take care of, you know, arranging who's going to watch the kids, and I make the plans, and I take her to her favorite restaurant, and we go see a movie that she wants to see, or we go do something that she wants to do. And she knows that it's not what it's the night isn't about me. It's about me doing something from her. And that is definitional to her as romantic, where I'm serving her desires and her needs. And
being selfless.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, and it goes the other way. Like, when I come home, Sam knows I've had a really bad day. Like, lately I've been studying really late and I've been stressed and it's been tough and it's been hard. And I walk to the door and she, you know, she's taking care of everything. She's like, I got food for you. I know you're probably hungry. You know, here's a beer, like sit down, relax, you know, cool down from the day. Like that kind of stuff for me is huge because it's like she went out of her way. She's been at home with the kids all day long. She's been working just as hard as me, if not harder. And she has gone out of her way to think, okay, Tanner's going to be coming home. He's going to be exhausted. The last thing he wants to do is probably like have to cook something for himself. He's probably going to want to like relax for a minute and just like shake the day off. So I'm going to have everything ready for him so he can just come in and relax. And like that is, it's, you know, those are the kind of things for me. I'm like, you know, I mean, I see it as, you know, I guess you could say like it's romantic that she thinks of me ahead of time so that I don't have to worry about those things. And it is selfless for her to do something like that, you know? So a lot of it just boils down. Romance is simply just putting that person in front of yourself, doing things for them, you know? And it's funny because this kind of even plays into like our, not in the romance way, but it plays in all levels of our life. Like with our kids, for instance, like I read a book a long time ago. I think it was Way of the Wild Heart. I can't remember, but it was about raising boys. Basically, and one section that has always stuck with me is where he's talking about, he does like these trips with like his boys individually, like where he'll go camping with like one of his kids or they maybe they'll go do something else. But he said that a lot of dads make the mistake of bringing their kids in on their hobbies. So like dad, like for instance, I brew beer. So like my kid, you know, this is a bad example because they're kids, but you know, let's say I don't brew beer. Say I like to cycle too. So I'm like, well, we're going to go for a bike ride. But my kid has no interest in cycling. He doesn't really care about cycling. So I'm like, what am I doing? Am I really like spending time with my kid in a way that shows him that I care about what he cares about. Well, let's say my kid's favorite thing is fishing. Well, maybe my kid knows that I'm not really that into fishing, but I go out of my way. We are like, we're going to go get some fishing rods. We're going to go to the lake. We're going to fish all day. Like, we're going to do what you want to do. And one of the sections in the book is he's talking about how his kid, and it's actually fishing, his kid really likes to do like small, like creek fishing. And this guy's more of like a fly fisher. He likes like big open water, like I think it's like saltwater fly fishing and stuff. But his kid doesn't like doing that. So when he spends the day with his kid, they go and do stuff that he wants to do, not what the dad wants to do. And that has really stuck with me. And I've, you know, and I'm not always great with it with my kids, you know, but like when you're trying to serve somebody else, like strive to do something that shows them that you want to do what they want to do, and show them that you're willing to put like your desires lower than theirs and enjoy yourself like with what they like to do, you know, and learn about things that they enjoy learning about and stuff. And I think that's, it goes further than just our marriages. It goes into how we raise our kids. It goes into how we treat friends. Like, you know, do stuff with friends that they like to do. Don't always have to do what you want to do, and show them that there's, you know, that there's a love in you that goes beyond what, you know, the fairy tale movie says, or what, you know, in general, like pop culture says is caring for one another. Yeah. And I think we have a perfect example of what that looks like, because we've all like thought about it. I mean, as Christians, like there's no way that Christ was enjoying being beaten and nailed to a cross, but he saw it as joy because of what was being accomplished by it. But it still was not like, you know, he even said, like, if there's any other way that I can do this, Lord, like, please let that be the way. So we see this human aspect in him that shows that, like, the pain of what was to come was grueling on his spirit, but he still saw joy in it because of what was being accomplished. And I think that we can, I mean, what we're doing, what we're talking about is obviously so much smaller, but we can take that piece and say, okay, so I can find joy in serving others, maybe if it's not my favorite thing, but I can find joy in it because of what's being accomplished and the love that's being shown through it. And I think that goes, it really should be seen in our, it really can be practiced in our marriages, but it should expand outward from that too. So,
man, good stuff. Tanner, you want to get into everybody in the pub?
Yeah, man.
So Tanner, I'm going to tell you about some people who are showing us some love on the Twitter.
The Twitter.
Paige Ryan, Philemon Rose, Ricky Ragone, Deacon Deadpool, Peter Bradshaw, Forfair Davis, Trevor, which is Got Theology, Stephanie Joe, David Cabrera, Luke Shepherd, Dustin Germain, Scott James Busby, Stephen Cheryl, Ashford James, Logan Green, 767, which is at 767_S6, Troy Willis, and at Nourl. Nourl, at Nourl. Thank you guys so much for letting other people know that you're listening to the show. That is the only way our silly little podcast gets around, by you people letting your friends know. So we really appreciate it. We appreciate it more than you can imagine. So if you know anybody this week that might be interested in a silly little podcast like the one that we make, let them know about it so that they'll check it out and we'll get some more listeners. Thank you so much.
Question for episode 45. What food did you hate as a kid but you've grown to love? Les?
I have got to go with pickles.
Pickles?
And it's really not even when I was a kid. Like, I hated pickles up until probably a year and a half ago.
Man, pickles are like my favorite.
Very, very recent change in my my tastes. And we go
what did
to
it, man. What pickle? Well, what pickle think, changed your mind?
I think that Chick-fil-A had a lot to do with it.
Ooh, that, very that, very good.
Yeah, that pickle infused chicken. Oh, but now so we go good. To even when I go to PA Grill, there's a PA Barbecue. There's a place in South Florida called PA, and they put out pickles.
Park Avenue.
Yeah, Park Avenue. Yep. They put out pickles on the table for instead of, like, you know, if you go to a Mexican restaurant, they put out chips. This place puts out pickles in, like, a little tray.
Little bucket.
As an appetizer, so you eat them. And I can just straight up eat these pickles. I used to hate pickles. Now I love pickles, so that's definitely mine. Pickles.
You got to get on the fried pickle train.
Oh, no, I love fried pickles. Hurricane Wings has some amazing fried pickles.
Whew. Those things, that's salty and salty fried, like, oh, so good.
Yes.
Yes. We used to go to a deli that served pickles, like, in a bucket, like, when you sat down. Pickles and bagel chips were, like, their thing. I don't know why. But us Americans, we love our bread at the table. Like, give me that bread, man. I need that bread and butter. And then you fill up on it and you can't eat anything else. And then this place also gave pickles. So it was, I could eat a meal and bagel chips and pickles before my sandwich came. It was, and they were the good, like kosher, like garlic, amazing pickles, like super crisp. I think they made them themselves. Do yourself a favor. Go on YouTube and type in Alton Brown in a pickle. He teaches you how to make homemade pickles, and they are delicious.
Get him on the cast.
Get him on the cast. I'd love to get Alton Brown on the cast. That'd be amazing. So for me, I'd have to say meat sauce, like for pasta, or like ground meat
Ooh,
sauce.
Okay.
I hated that stuff as a kid, and now I'm on board.
Bolognese.
The combination of like sausage, like Italian sausage meat sauce, I think is really what it was. And I am a huge fan of Italian sausage meat, like meat sauce now in my pasta. Like so, that. I don't know, man, something just switched. And, it might have been just because my mom always served just regular sauce, like without meat in it when I was a kid. And so I just wasn't exposed to it a lot. And so when I had it, I just didn't really like it. But I'm definitely on board now.
Jeanette Tulninga on Facebook says pea soup, which I can relate to. Yeah, that's that was kind of gross as a kid, but it's delicious. Split pea soup.
Awesome. Oh, man. With the ham?
Yeah.
Ham shank? Mm-hmm. So good. Nikki Watson says coffee. I think most kids, I don't know when that switch happens, but man, we go from hating it to it being our lifeline as adults.
I remember when I was like 17 or 18, it was right around Y2K actually. Cause I remember drinking tons of coffee on, a party that I hosted for Y2K. And I was getting a straight up buzz from my coffee. And that was when I was just becoming a coffee lover. Melanie Siebert says pizza.
What?
Yeah, I was a weird kid, she says. Yeah, that's a weird kid that doesn't love pizza.
Yeah, man. Pizza was definitely the it was like all the food groups in one as a kid.
Exactly.
Matt Johnson says sauerkraut and beer. Duh.
Yeah. Beer is an acquired taste. Matt Davis says cantaloupe, Brussels sprouts, and ramen noodles. Not together. I don't know what that means. Yeah, those are all cantaloupe. Yeah, cantaloupe is... I still don't love cantaloupe. Do you love cantaloupe?
Dude, cantaloupe is amazing.
All right,
I guess. Nice ripe cantaloupe at like cold in the summer. Oh, it's like a drink and a meal all in one.
Yeah,
it's delicious. Chuck Adams says fish and beets.
Fish and beets.
I guess
what is that?
Together, I have no
what?
Idea. Fish and beets. It sounds like a. A more seafoody version of the Doug Band, the Beats. No,
no? Yeah, no. Remember the Beats? Yeah, I remember.
Tyler Bazert says liver, amazing.
What?
Dude, I have to say, I need to learn how to love liver. We just did we just had a nutritional lecture in med school, and liver is seriously a wonder food. The amount,
really?
Like, they went over stats of people who admit to eating liver at least once a year. Dude, these people are like superhumans. They live like an average of like 10 years longer. I mean, I'm sure there's other stuff that goes along with it. Maybe people who eat liver are more active or something, or their lifestyle is just different. There's always other variables involved in these stats, but they live like 10 years longer than other people. And the big thing that they credit it to is the liver is loaded with vitamins. It's like crazy amounts of antioxidants. Like one serving of liver is ridiculous. These people have like, they don't show signs of like hyperlipidemia. They don't like all these amazing benefits. It's almost like the same stats you get from people who are like from Greece or on Mediterranean diets, like heavy seafood diets. Liver is a wonder food, man.
Wow.
I need to learn how to love liver because, apparently I can live longer if I eat it. So good for you, Tyler. Keep eating your liver.
Yeah.
You will live long and prosper.
Joel Kizaya says, the older I get, the more I appreciate hot sauce. That's a good one.
I love hot sauce on everything.
Me too.
So
yeah, me too.
Steven Nyland says fart.
I don't know
what's going on there.
Come on.
Fart?
Like fart, F-A-R-T?
Yeah, maybe he was
talking
about broccoli, cool. Maybe from a previous post. There's a lot of broccoli on here. Broccoli does cause flatulence, but
Vaughn Smith says bacon. So apparently he didn't like bacon as a child.
Wow.
And now he's come around.
Can't remember a time when I didn't like bacon.
It's pretty much the
I used to come back from my grandparents' house 10 pounds heavier because I'd eat pounds and pounds of bacon when I was there.
Word.
Yeah, man. a lot of green beans, a lot of Brussels sprouts.
A lot of mushrooms.
A lot of mushrooms.
Asparagus.
I'm a big mushroom fan. I had a sandwich at a Vietnamese place today. Well, I had a pork belly sandwich, but my wife had a portobello mushroom with spicy mayo, and it was fantastic. I love mushrooms. Very good stuff.
Cool. Well, Tanner, do you have any recommendations?
I do have recommendations. My first recommendation is for everybody to go out and buy a bottle of something made by Dogfish Head in honor of our awesome friend, Sean, who works there and is super generous and super smart when it comes to beer. Support that company, man. They're an amazing company, and they were one of the first to be doing what we all are very happy that a lot more companies are doing now, which is making craft beer. And the owner is a huge proponent of bringing down the big guys and bringing up the little guys who make good quality beer. So support that company, because without them, I don't think that the craft beer revolution would have happened when it did, or even at all. Like the owner used to go around and basically hold like conferences about how amazing craft beer was. So support those guys.
Absolutely. Good stuff. For my recommendation, I would like to recommend King's Kaleidoscope. Fantastic, fantastic band. You've probably known them for a lot of their, Mars Hill, worship, lead, you know, they were worship leaders at Mars Hill. They did a lot of, worship stuff for them, and they released a couple, EPs that were a few songs of hymns and stuff like that, but they are very soon releasing their first full length album, and it sounds unbelievable. Sample songs that they put out so far. So, look out for King's Kaleidoscope. It's going to be amazing when, this first album, their first full length album drops.
Very cool. And for my last recommendation, this is going to sound a little weird, but it has a good ending. I want you to go to Google, and I want you to type in human metabolism pathway. And then the third image result on the page that comes up, not in the images page, but in the page that comes up where it says images for human metabolism, it is a picture that is 8,640 by 6,000. But the reason I want you to do this is because in med school, as I'm learning about the human body and I'm learning about like just a very small little portion of the human body, which is just enzyme metabolism and how we process energy and make it and break it down and stuff. Dude, I am being brought to so much worship of how intricate the design of the human body is. And if you pull up this picture, it will blow your mind. It is huge, and it's literally the entire human metabolism on this huge picture. And the intricacy of it is, it will bring you to your knees in worship of how amazing God is for...
What's the search term again?
Human metabolism pathway. And it's the largest image on it. It's 8640 times 6,000. It takes forever to load, and it is absolutely phenomenal. It's actually, if you go to my profile page on my banner, it's just a very small piece of it. Just the TCA cycle is on my Facebook page and my banner, and it will blow your mind, and it will bring you to worship because God spoke this into existence, and I have literally been studying it nonstop for the last 3 weeks, and I have literally just scratched the surface of what actually goes on in human metabolism, and I hardly know anything about it at all. and people dedicate their lives to understanding this and never really truly understand how it all works. Man, what an amazing God we have, and how powerful is He that He can speak something like this into existence, and we can hardly even discover how it works. So, amazing.
Hey guys, if you would like to contact us, you can join our Facebook group called The Reformed Pub. You can follow us on Twitter at Reformed Pubcast. You can email us reformpub@gmail.com, and you can always leave us voicemails by calling 772-405-7327. And if you have some time this week, please go to iTunes and you can rate and review us, which is a great way that you can help us stay relevant in the iTunes store amongst all those other Christian podcasts that we have to destroy, obviously. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Reformed Pubcast. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed making it. Until next week. Cheers
and amen. Yo.
Ever talked about doctrine while sipping some ale? Well, I've been fixing to tell where you've been missing yourself. The theology of Calvin and the thirst of Luther. Faithful consumers of the craft brewers. Talking theology with the cup at the pub, right? If you're drinking Bud Light, then I'ma start a pub fight. Let's talk about Christ who died for like 3 days. Here without delay and grab your IPAs. This is heavy like holding a bazooka. What topic hotter than the cold for your hookah? Hear an episode while riding your car. Talking Christ at the bars with pipes and cigars. Glorifying and enjoying God is our one task. Gotta make the fun last, so don't drink it dumb fast. If it hasn't gone flat, then it makes us so glad. Bring your own glass, it's Reformed Pubcast.
Did you wear your t-shirt yet?
What are you saying?
Your t-shirt?
Did I wear it?
Yeah.
Confession about the t-shirt, bro. That thing has like crazy midriff. Crazy, crazy midriff.
What?
It's too short. Like I normally wear smalls, but that is literally the world's smallest small ever. So
you're not wearing the girl's small, are you?
Unless it's a girl small, but... Dude,
are the sleeves way too short?
Dude, everything is small. Like,
did I give you a girl's small?
Maybe.
Dude, I don't know. I'm wearing a medium, and it's like exactly what a medium should be. So yeah, maybe you have the
maybe
wrong size.
Maybe you gave me a girl's small. Dude, it's mid-drifty. Like, my belly button sticks out when I raise my arms.